My name is Suzanne. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm asked to briefly qualify. It says the requirements for chairing this meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and I've attended a group conscience meeting, and I have met those requirements today. I'm really glad to be here tonight, and God works in great ways. You know, I was a little late on the get tonight, and it's just amazing. I was driving here, and I was saying, you know, back in the day, if I was late, I wouldn't have gone. You know, I would have stayed at home and said, well, screw them. You know, what are they good for? And I would have continued drinking, and it's nice to know that today, through sobriety, it's just not just about not drinking. It's about living differently, and when we step up to the plate and say we're going to do something, you know, I've been told that it's my responsibility to continue to step up and make sure I follow through. And those are the things I continue to learn in my sobriety. It's just amazing. You know, 25 years ago, if you told me that AA was just about growing up and living differently, I would have said, well, I'm just here to not drink. And then that's really what my perspective was, that AA was going to teach me just not to drink, and that was it. And I'd go on my merry way, and God, it's a lot more than that. And I'm constantly reminded from reading and studying and talking to others that if I'm not expanding my spiritual life, I'm missing the boat on this thing. So that's why I keep showing up. Our speaker tonight is John. Thank you. It's John, and he's from the Daytona group. And I met John probably 3 years ago, and I'm sure he's going to give his version of this story. My version is I was a little pissed off, irritable, restless, and discontented. I was on my way to a retreat, got lost in the Ocala State Forest, and finally got to the retreat, and it was this spiritual retreat, and I was not feeling anywhere near spiritual. And the first breakout group sits this guy, and you know, they went around the group, and I kind of shared where I was at. And John looked at me and said, look, in his very sweet, charming voice, if by the end of the weekend you aren't happy, I just don't know. I bet by the end of the weekend you're happy. And I've got to tell you, it wasn't necessarily because of the retreat that I got happy. It's because I got to hear his message, and I got to see the love of AA work through this man in my life. And there are people that have shown up on my path in AA that have made such a tremendous impact. And John is one of those people that came into my life at exactly the right moment. And in some ways, he's filled the void where my grandfather used to reside, and where my father in some ways wasn't able to reside. And John has just stepped into my life in such a tremendous way. And through him, I have gained a new perspective on some things in my life. So without any further ado, John.
Hi, my name is John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
My story is a little different, but you've probably heard that already. August 22nd, 1966, my last day of drinking. I was a moving man. Anybody wants to go out again, and if he wants a great job, go to the moving business, because you can drink all day, stay up all night, and it's great, because if you're going in and you're going to carry somebody's refrigerator on your back down five floors, and you come back up and you say, "Can I have a glass of water, please?" And the first thing he says, "You'd rather have a beer?"
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the way it went. My last day of drinking, I got home at 4 o'clock in the morning. I had a 7 o'clock start in New Rochelle, which is about an hour away. And I made it on time. Except I was a little drunk. And the driver was a guy from out of town. He just had two helpers, me and another guy, an Irish kid. I forget his name now. But anyway, he was coming out, and I got in the truck, and we had to go to Long Island. And I was getting in, and I said, "Whoa, stop at that light down there. I'm going to run into the grocery there and get a six-pack. The driver says, "I can't stop." "What do you mean you can't stop?" He said, "I got the meter running in the car. They stopped. They're going to catch me." I said, it'll take me time. You can stop for a light, for God's sakes, and let me run in and get a sick pack. So anyway, he says, I can't stop. I'm going to a meeting. I says, hey, I need a six pack. No, my God. Well, we'll get one later. So I go down. We go to the house. Now I'm pissed. Because now I got a driver that won't stop. I says, I'll tell you what. I'm getting a beer or I'm leaving the job. I ain't staying without a six pack. So he says, let's go up and inventory the job first. Okay. All right, let's go. We inventory it. I says, I'm going to go for a beer. And he says, hey, man, I got a jug in the car. Oh, I said, that's better. I said, all right. So anyway, I was there that night, and I went down. I know he took out a fifth of Carstairs, and there was about that much in it, you know? And I wasn't much of a booze drinker, but any port in a storm, you know? So I grabbed the bottle and I was sipping it down. We got the truck loaded and then we stopped for lunch and then we got the job done. And all day I'm bitching at him. I'm saying, hey, I'm not going to get another helper to go out with you again. You don't know how to stop. You don't know how to do this. You don't know how to do that. You know. Okay. So anyway, I get off. I walk into a bar that I knew and I ran into a guy that we had trouble. He was going out. And I was knocked off for the day as a helper. I was a helper, and this guy was going out to pick up a piano. And I just went over to pick up my check, drunk again. Pick up my check, and I see him going out. And somebody says, he's got a piano on the truck. He's got a piano on the truck with no helpers? He says, well, the ship is going to help him. Ship is going to help him? Are you crazy? I'm knocked off to work today, so I try to follow him. He's driving the truck and trailer, and he lost me. You know. So anyway, that's going over. So now I walk into the bar at 5 o'clock. Now I'm good and stewed. I was calling a cab to get home, and I had a fight with the guy that was driving that truck and trailer, and I went down and he nearly kicked the head off my shoulders. I was taken into the hospital, New Rochelle Hospital. I was had the last rites of the church, and I had everybody coming in. My family was around the bed. I didn't even realize this. It was Friday night. I didn't wake up until Monday. But I woke up Monday, and everybody, brothers and sisters, are around the bed. I'm going to tell you something. If you wake up in a hospital, and your brothers and sisters are around the bed, it's a bad sign. You know? So anyway, I'm there, and now it's night. The nurse comes in. She says, John, would you like me to make your bed? I'll fix your bed up for you. Would you like to sit out and I'll do it? I said, sure. So she gets me out of the bed, sits me in the chair. I don't know. Meanwhile, I'm not sure I'm in a hospital even, you know. I just woke up out of this thing. It was 4 days of sleep or in a coma or whatever. And she starts making my bed, as nurses do, walks around the bed. And I said, would you give me a cigarette, please? She says, this is intensive care, John. You can't smoke. I said, would you please give me a cigarette? She says, John, this is intensive care. You can't smoke. I says, either you give me a cigarette or I'm going where I can smoke. She says, huh, okay. You know. So meanwhile, I get up, take one step, and I fall right on my face. I don't know what's happening now. And just then, my doctor was walking past my bed. He helps me up. The nurse, of course, is trying to help me up, and everybody's trying to help me up. They get me back in bed, and I'm saying, what's going on? You know, because I'm beginning to think I'm in a little trouble. You know? So, anyway, I come in, and my doctor is there, and he leans over the bed. He's got me in the bed, and he says, listen, you've been in a fight. You've got head injury. I said, okay, I'll take the head injury. What's wrong with my legs? He says, you probably forgot how to walk. You know, that's eye-opening. Really, did I forget? Will it come back or what? You know. So anyway, here I go. Now I'm 2 weeks in the hospital. I'm getting out. I can't drive. I can't walk too steady. You know, I don't think that's come back yet. But I'm there now, and I'm 2 weeks in the hospital, a week out, and I got to go to my first appointment at the doctor's office. So I go over there, and my sister, of course, drives me to the hospital, drives me to his office, takes me into the office, and I'm sitting down, and she's there, and I'm saying, well, he says, John, you're doing great. Now I've realized I've had a concussion, I've been in a fight, you know, and I got to get well. And everybody gets well. And he says, you know, you're doing really well. He said, except one thing. I said, what's that? He says, you'll never be able to drink the way you drank. What? I said, never? He said, well, if you'd like to have a cocktail on your birthday, go ahead.
Yeah.
I said, excuse me? A cocktail on my birthday? Now, I have the realization of, I'm hurt, man. You know? And he said to me, now, if you drink, you're going to have seizures. If you don't drink, no seizures. And that's exactly the way he said it. Drink, seizures, no drink, no seizures. I said, so I let that sink in. I'm coming home. I'm quiet. I'm thinking, women are done forever. I will never be able to talk to a girl again. Dancing is out. Jokes is out. I'm done. My sister is driving the car, and I never forget it till this day. She looks over to me and she says, you know something? This might be the best thing that's ever happened to you. My head was in a rage. I couldn't believe what she just said, and I just couldn't believe where I was in life. You know, I was 31 years old and I can never drink again? That's crazy. Anyway, I was always, when I was drunk, when I was drinking, tomorrow, I'm getting me a sales job. Because I can sell. And I knew it. I mean, I knew I could sell. And I says, the hell with this moving business. Every night, I'd sit there and say, when I had a few, I'm getting me a sales job tomorrow, and I'm going into the sales, and I'm going to be the best salesman in town. And I'd wake up, grab my hump strap, and go work in a moving company, because I had no confidence whatsoever, none. I had a tough time in Catholic school for the first 8 years. I realized what my problem was. I peaked in the first grade. And it went downhill after that. You know? So I got through Catholic school, you know, and everything went pretty well for me, you know. And now I went out to California. I was not drinking for about a year, and I went back to California. I was working here in Daytona Beach, Florida, selling cars, and I got into the car business, and I was good. I mean, I'm telling you, I was good. And I started a little Daytona auto sales, and this guy, and I was working about 4 months for him, and this Ted Robinson, he was just an old-time car man. And he said, you're good. And he told me everything to do and what to do and how to do it. And it came to me. It just came to me, man. I just knew what to do and knew what to say. And it was just a scheming thing anyhow, you know, that, and it just come natural to me. And anyway, now Archie Baldwin, I think his name was, I'm not sure, but anyway, he said to Ted Robinson one day, and he says, I'm going to lay John off because I just want two guys here, me and you. Well, you weren't, and Ted, of course, told me, and he said, well, I said, oh, man, because I was married now with two kids, you know. They say don't get married in the first year. I was in the first year, I got married, and I had two kids, you know. But I didn't have AA. because I was an alcoholic. You know, if I was alcoholic, I would have looked up AA. But I wasn't alcoholic, and I knew I wasn't alcoholic. So anyway, Ted Robinson, when I says, hey, listen, I don't know what I'm going to do now, you know. He said, don't worry, John. He says, everybody's going to be after you. I didn't even understand that. I never understood what the hell he was saying, because nobody ever was after me. You know, that's just the way it was with me. You know, so I started selling cars at Spence Chevrolet, and I was still good. I remember one day I'm coming home after about a month, I sold 3 cars. I made $1,000. I'm driving home and I'm saying to myself, you made $1,000 today. You made $1,000. I was trying to think there was 5 guys in the car, you know? And I kept changing my voice. You made $1,000 today. You know? And it was, I couldn't believe it. But I knew what it was. You see, I knew the day I did that, I had a lucky shirt on. The day I did that, I had a lucky pen. There was something lucky about me, because I gave myself no confidence whatsoever. And I look back now and I see that in my life. I gave myself nothing. But, and then, until I got to the point where I was saying, I'm good, man. I'm a good salesman. And then my life progressed. Getting ahead of myself. I'm sober 14 years. I'm back in California. I'm in the car business. I'm doing great. I've got 2 kids. I own a house. Everything is going well for me. Everything is going well for me. My son calls me. I'm from Tennessee. And he says, Dad, first of all, I'd call him. Or he'd call me. And he'd say, hey, hi, Dad. You know, the little sing-song voice. That, you know, the other guy is loaded. You know. Hi, Dad, how are you? You know. I said, I'm fine. You been drinking there? I had a couple of beers. And then I would say to him, right after that, I say, you know something, John, I'm going to tell you something. If your name is Shevlin, you can't drink. You understand that? Now, I hung up the phone, and if somebody was standing right there with me, and they said, your name is Shevlin, are you alcoholic? I'd say, no. No, I wasn't an alcoholic. I said, I was heading in that direction. But I wasn't an alcoholic. I had been jailed 5 times. But you see, I never got arrested for anything bad. See, I got the little simple thing, fights in bars, you know, stuff that everybody does. There was one burglary. But, you know, it was just kid stuff, you know what I mean? You don't want to go drinking with Petey Ford, because Petey Ford was trouble, you know? But when he kicked in the window, I was standing outside, and he handed me money, and I took it. That means I was involved, you know? So anyway, now I'm 14 years sober. My son calls me, and he says, Dad, I've got a problem with booze and drugs, and I'm coming home. He was in the Army for 7 years. He just got out. He was married, had 2 kids, and he was coming home to California to see if he could get sober. Now, I knew where to go. You see, in Thousand Oaks, California, I was a member of every 12-step program in Thousand Oaks. I was in GA. I was in OA. I was in every AA. No, AA I wasn't in, because I wasn't alcoholic. I was heading in that direction, you know, but I just wasn't. So anyway, now I go over to Joe, and I was in OA and GA, and every time, and when you're in that problem, all you see is alcoholics and that. You know, all you have is alcoholics and that. And they'd always start off with me, except when you drink. And I say, no, I don't drink anymore. You on the program? I says, no, I'm not on no program. I'm not alcoholic. Thank you very much. You know? I was heading in that direction, I'd say. They said, oh, okay. He said, were you a blackout drinker? I said, that's another thing. I never blacked out unless I drank too much. And I was in so much denial, it was crazy. But I was getting along. And one day my wife says to me, you know something? My ex-wife. You know something? We're the only two that don't smoke pot. I said, smoke pot. I knew who I was going to go to. I knew where I was going to get it, how I was going to get it, and what I was going to do. I was an inch away from buying pot. And I thought if I bought pot, it would have probably killed me because I'd have started drinking right away. Anyway, I go back to New York on vacation. I go up to 27th Street and Broadway, Costello's Bar and Grill. And I walk in. There's two or three of my friends there. And, hey, Shevlin, how are you? I'm not bad. How's it going? Have a drink, man. I said, no, I'm not drinking. You're still not drinking, for God's sake. No. So I'm talking to him. Meanwhile, you ever go into a bar, talk to three guys that are halfway drunk? You got to get out of here kind of quick. You know what I mean? Because they're boring as hell, you know. So anyway, I go in, I'm talking to him, and I said to him, listen, where the hell are all the guys? I don't see them. I mean, you know, I see the same three guys at Costello's everything. So they said, you want to see all the guys? We're down to St. Julie's on Wednesday night. All right. That's not mine. Uh-oh. So I said, all right. So I go down to St. Julie's. But we're down to St. Julie's on Wednesday night. AA meeting, man. And I walk in there and I see guys. Johnny Monahan, Andy Ford, Quigley. Seven of them. Gus Talios, I had like four fights with. You know, and he's there, they're all there, and they're all around me, and they're saying, Shevlin, how are you, man? Boone, you know, you drinking? No, I haven't had a drink in 14 years. 14 years, no shit, you on the program? I ain't on no program. You know, so anyway, I'm there, and I'm sitting there, and then with they start telling Shevlin stories. Mm-hmm. And this is going one after another. And then the night that the guy in the white tower and the cop took you into the bus depot and beat the crap out of you. Remember? Yeah, I remember. You know? And they're all telling Johnny Monahan. This story that you might be interested in. Johnny Monahan tells a story about Francis Kitt and the five defendants. We're in a bar one night up there, the Duck Inn, and we're down one end of the bar, and there's another group of guys come in down the other end of the bar. And you know what happened? They meet in the middle, and everything went loose, man. There was a fight. There was broken things. And I'm looking out the window. I'm in a men's room. I'm looking out the window at two cops. Have got Frank Kidd on the top of the stairs. And they throw him down the stairs. And I said, oh, Jesus. You know, and then they liked it so much, they took him to the top of the stairs again, and they threw him down the stairs again. And so now Frank Kitt's locked up, but he's a felony. Resisting arrest and everything, because he was just bleeding. They took him to the hospital first. But this one, I was walking out of the men's room, and one cop just comes in to take one more look. You know, one more look kills you? So I'm there, and the cop says, hey, come here. Gets me out there, throws me into the group, throws me into the pile wagon. I'm with the five defendants. We're going down. We're in jail. We're down at 100 Center Street. There used to be a TV story, 100 Center Street. I was there five times. But anyway, we come out there. We're coming up. We've got 13 cents among five guys. The subway at the time is 15 cents. We haven't got enough to send one guy home to get money. You know? So anyway, here we are. We're waiting in the... There is a girl sitting in this clubhouse. And I tell you, she was beautiful. She's wearing a red plaid type skirt over a white underneath dress, and she's beautiful, man. So I sat down next to her, and on her lap there was a full pack of Pall Mall cigarettes. You know, so I put my arm around the back of the seat and I said, hi. She couldn't speak English, she was Spanish. Hi. And she said, hi. I said, would you mind if I had a cigarette? She said, no. She gave me a cigarette. And I had the pack in my hand. I said, would you mind if I gave my friends a cigarette? She said, no, go ahead. I said, she's in love. You know? So I give them cigarettes. You know, and I thank you, you know. And I still got my arm around the thing with smoking, and then they're taking us into the clubhouse, into the court, and it was 4th of July weekend. So he's trying, the judge is trying to get them all out of it. All out of thing, you know, to get out of there. He's looking to get out of there by noon, you know. Meanwhile, the judge is calling them all, and the bailiff is calling everybody up, and she's right in front of us, you know. So this guy says, Juan Gonzalez charge impersonating a woman. That was the only time I ever got the girl. So now, meanwhile, I'm at the the AA meeting, and they're still telling stories. Ha 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 ha! Yeah, I'm laughing right with them, and the meeting starts, and somebody's up at the meeting, and a guy is there, and he's a street guy. His name was Danny O'Shea, and he lived with me in California, and we used to drink a lot together, you know. But now he was a street guy, and I'm saying, wow, look at him, he's gone downhill, man, you know. So anyway, within and. The meeting just started off just like this, you know. My name is such and such, and I'm an alcoholic. Any other alcoholics in the room? I seen everybody's hand going up. My hand went up, knowing that I was not alcoholic. And I thought somebody was going to come up and say, hey, Shevlin, get out of here. This is a serious program. Out! You know? But nobody did. They let me say that. And after the meeting, we all went for coffee, and they all said Shevlin jokes. You know, it was funny as hell. You know. Anyway, then my son calls. My son calls, and he says, I have trouble with alcohol and booze. Can you help me? I says, yes, I can. I know where to go. Joe's Tire Shop. That's known everybody in, you know, that goes to, I mean, like I told you, I was in every AA group, every GA, not AA, GA, OA, DA, anything that had an AA, I was a member. So, anyway, I'm there and I said, Joe, my son's got a problem with booze and I'm going to take him over here tomorrow. Can you help him? Yeah, sure, I can help him. You know. Anyway, I take him over. Joe, here's my son. Here, okay. You want to get sober? Okay, I'll tell you how to do it. Now, John's got 15 days. He got a chip here, chip there, you know. Oh, he's telling me stories about the program. Oh, yeah. And, you know, he says to me, you know, a lot of those guys are concerned about you. Oh, yeah, really? Well, what for? I'm fine, you know. Didn't I tell you I was fine? You know, I wasn't. I just want to take the edge off. That's what I wanted to do with the marijuana. I just want to get the edge off, you know? So anyway, John texts me. He says, you want to go to a meeting with me tonight? And I said, yeah, sure I will. And it was a meeting at the hospital. Two-speaker meeting. And Joe was leading it from Joe's Tire. And he said, my name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. Are there any other alcoholics in the room? And I raised my hand. I get upset a little at this because it might have been the smartest night of my life. I raised my hand and I knew 100% that I was an alcoholic. And I knew this is where I belonged. And I knew why I was there. But I didn't know what was going to happen. You see, I wasn't drinking until I found out that drinking has such little to do with alcoholics. You know, I was at a meeting, and I kept going to meetings, and I kept learning things, and things started to come to me. And my first conscious prayer, did you take my watch? I'm okay. So my first conscious prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous, my son used to say, he used to say to me, you know, I had 14 years of, not sober, I had 14 years to put the plug in the jug. And he used to say to me, hey, Dad, you got a sponsor? And I'd say to myself, I'm looking for a guy that's in a better place than I am. You know, looking for the burning bush when the whole forest is on fire. You know? You know that tune, right? Anyway, so now, I asked a guy to be my sponsor. And the only reason I asked him is because when somebody said, hey, John, you got a sponsor? I said, yeah, Tom. Tom's my sponsor. Good man. You know? I didn't know what he would do for me. I didn't know why I wanted to talk to him. I just knew that everybody said, get a sponsor. So I was going 2 weeks. I never called Tom. I never, you know, he was just a figurehead for me to talk about. You know? So anyway, my first conscious prayer, as I remember it, in Alcoholics Anonymous was, I said, okay, God, if you want me to have a sponsor, show me somebody. Okay. So I'm gone. 1 week, 2 weeks go by, I'm at a speaker's meeting, and this guy gets up and he says, my name is Mike and I'm an alcoholic. So he's talking. In my neighborhood, the special of the day was four roses, 25 cents. And I said, tapped the guy next to me and I said, he's from my neighborhood. They sold four roses all over New York, but I knew he was from my neighborhood. I went up to him after the meeting. I said, hey, how you doing? Where you from?
New York.
Oh. What part?
Manhattan.
Oh. They give you one answer to things, you know, they don't help you at all. So I said, what part of Manhattan?
He said, Washington Heights.
I said, that's where I'm from. That's where I'm from. I'm from Washington Heights. We drank. You think God's working in your life? We drank in the same bar. He wasn't Mike then. He was Blackie. And Blackie sat down at the other end of the bar, and we were at this end of the bar. Because we were drinkers, and they were losers. They're all junkies. And you know, you could. So anyway, he was down there. He was down there, and I was up here, and I never met him. And the day he died, the weekend he died, they asked me to sit with him for 4 hours. And it was the most important 4 hours I ever had in my life, almost. Because he was dying. And he said, he gets a phone call, and I'm with him for about 2 or 3 hours, and he gets a phone call, yeah, I know, okay. And he hangs up the phone, and he says, you know, people are upset over this. I says, upset over what? Me! I says, I'm upset over you. You know, everybody is. But he said to me, that, I said to him that day, how come I never met Blackie? And I met Mike. Mike changed my life like no other man. Mike, I know to this day, he was put in my life by God. I know that like I'm as sure as I'm talking to you. So anyway, Now, of course, a couple of times I went down to his house. I always run down with my ass in my hands. And, you know, I come down about. I remember the day that I wrote my first four step with a priest, and I think it was maybe four sentences. You know, I cursed five times, you know. You know, it was like my first Holy Communion confession, you know what I mean? So I gave it to him, and I gave it to the priest that I sat it with. Okay, we're going to turn this up, tear it away, throw it in the garbage when you leave. Okay. I wasn't so bad, you know. So now Mike tells me to write a fourth. And I wrote, I got a manuscript now, you know. So anyway, I call him up on a Saturday. And I said, hey, Mike, I finished that fourth step. You want to hear it? Yeah, no, he was off on Saturday. And he was a bachelor. So he did his stuff on Saturday. He ironed shirts, he cleaned his house, he worked in the garden. You know, he says, all right, come, now it's 10 o'clock in the morning. He's okay, come down around 3. I hang up the phone. I said, 3? Screw you. You know, I ain't going nowhere with 3 o'clock. You know, so anyway, I went down at 3. So anyway, he says, so I'm there. Oh, and I'm going, so I decide I'm going to the movies. So I go to the movies, and I left my four step in the car on a seat, and I go in. One, please, go in and give my ticket to the guy that's taking the ticket. Says, oh my God, give me that. I grab my ticket and I go running back to my car. I left my fourth step under my seat. I said, holy shit, supposing somebody sees that, you know. They would have never understood. I mean, the guy that figured out the Jap decoder couldn't figure this one out, you know. So anyway, I get the thing. I open up the trunk of my car. Under the mat in the car, I put my fourth step. I pulled it around. Nobody knows that was lifted up and everything. I closed the thing. Then I went to the movie. And I come back and it was still there and everything, you know. So I go down to his house. We worked on it until about 7 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock that night. And I was, Jesus. And he looked at me and I said, how was that? All right, Mike? And he says, it was a good start. I said, start? That's it. You know, anyway, this guy was a blessing in my life. I mean, he just really was. And now John is out. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is going well. And I'm beginning to realize, one time I heard, I go to a meeting, and Clancy is speaking. Now, I don't know what anybody thinks about Clancy, but I used to go to the Pacific Group a lot. Every chance I got, I went to the Pacific Group. And I got to know Clancy. And I met him at San Antone convention, you know. I said, hey, Clancy. He says, John, how are you? And the guy I was with, Pat Shanahan, he says, Jesus, you know everybody. I said, yeah, and I was impressed as hell that he knew my name. Of course, when I walked away from him, I looked down and it was John written on my shirt. You know, how slick am I? But I never mentioned that to Pat. I said, yeah, I know a lot of people. You know, but anyway, he did recognize me, I think. I'm not sure, but I know John helped. You know. So now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm doing well, and I was at Thanksgiving dinner one time, just to see my growth, and I could feel it. Oh, and Clancy, at that meeting, said, "Let me tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous." And I had 14 years of sobriety, you know, when I came in. And he said, let me tell you what happens when you stop drinking. Nothing. Stopping drinking, don't do it. Stopping drinking, don't do it. Because if stopping drinking did it, prisoners would prisons would turn out winners. Institutions would turn out winners. Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps of alcoholics, 12 steps in the program, is what stops drinking, because it allows you to live. And from that night, I knew that drinking had little to do with what was wrong with me. My problem was living. And I knew that, you know. And there was one time that it was Thanksgiving, I think 1996, and we were having dinner at my son's house. And I come walking out, I went into the kitchen for something, and everybody was at the table. My two daughters, my son, two grandkids, everything. The table was full. And my daughter was talking to my son, and my other daughter was talking to my granddaughter, and this, and it was just magic around the table. And I looked, I just looked, and I knew that I had something. I had something that I never, ever knew that I had. It was magic around that. And I said to myself, I gotta be one of the luckiest men in the world. I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous was giving me something. You see, and about a week later, I was at a meeting with Clancy, and Clancy was speaking a little about something, and he said, I just had a kid, people call him from all over the world to sponsor him. Can you sponsor me? I'm going to come out. You know, and he used to say, listen, not everybody has a mission. I got a mission. Literally, he's got a mission, you know. He feeds the family, the homeless, you know. So anyway, he was talking that night, and he said, he talked to his son, this kid, and he said, you know something? Kid called him and says, I'm coming. I'm coming out to California. He said, okay, come on. Then he calls him back an hour later. He says, hey, I can't make it. I'm not coming to California. He's okay. That's fine. So he calls me again and he says, I'm coming to California. Okay. Calls me again. I'm not coming. He says, you know something? Maybe when you want to come, you won't be able to. You know? And my son was having a problem with his son. 16 years old, lived in Tennessee. And he wanted him to come out to California. He was having a problem with drugs and stuff, you know. And I was talking to him. He said, oh, Vincent's coming out. Vincent's not coming out. Vincent's coming out. And I said, you want me to call him? He says, would you call him? Yeah, I said, sure. So I called him and I said, Vincent, what's going on? Well, I don't know. You know something, Vincent? I says, you can come out now. And if you don't want to, that's fine. But when you want to, you might not be able to. Made sense to me. I hung up the phone. My son called me 5 minutes later, and he says, what the hell did you say to him? I said, I don't know. You know, I told him, you know, and he says, he just called me, says he's coming out. I said, oh, good. So then he's coming out on Friday. So my son called me that morning about 8 o'clock in the morning, and he says, Vincent's coming out today. He's landing at 3 o'clock. You want to pick him up? And I said, sure. I'm working down there, so I'll pick him up at 3. I'll be down there. And he called me 5 minutes later. And he said he just killed himself. And I'm saying, so I had to get dressed. I went over to John's house, and John was upset, of course, and his wife asked me to go out. She just got a call. He was gone. Could I tell him? And I went out in the yard, And I had to tell my son that his son was gone. And we flew out the next morning, me and John, to Tennessee. And John said, "You okay?" Yeah, I said, "I'm okay." I was so scared I couldn't believe it. I had to get on the line. I had to get on the line and rent the car, get the car, and I knew I had to talk to somebody. And I decided to call my sponsor. And I called him, and I got the answering machine. And it was him on the answering machine. And I said, didn't say anything, of course, but his voice empowered me. His voice empowered me. And I went there, and I got my car, and I got in the car, and we drove to Clarksville. I did not want to see his sister. I did not want to tell his sister that everything was going to be okay. I didn't want to see his mother and tell her that everything was going to be okay, because I didn't think it was going to be okay. But I got there, and my son did the eulogy. Probably the most proudest I've ever been of him in my whole life. But he said he belonged to a fellowship that believes some must die so others may live. And I knew that I belonged to that fellowship, and I was proud to belong to that fellowship. And that fellowship had changed my life, given me a life that I didn't know existed. Given me the type. See, I never expected, when I raised my hand in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, I never expected what I got, because I wasn't looking for anything. I wasn't looking to fill a hole. My hole is being filled right now as I talk. This program is the finest fellowship that's ever come. I don't know what I would do without the fellowship. Just coming up to this meeting tonight, meeting everybody here at the door. Suzanne, I love that girl. Honestly. And there's so many that I met tonight. I'm saying to myself, what a meeting. This is great. If I lived over here, I could belong here, because I could fit here. But you know something? I fit in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the blessing for me. I fit in every Alcoholics Anonymous I walk into. That's what this program has been to me. I'm going to wind this up with that mic changed my life. He called me up and he says, "Hey, John, Eddie Cochran speaking tonight. Want to come and listen to him?" I said, "Sure, I'll come." You know, I don't know about you, but if your sponsor calls you and he asks you to go and listen to a sponsor, don't tell him no. Word to the wise, you know. So I go there and I'm sitting there and I'm just listening to Eddie Cockle, who had 43 years at the time. He says, "I keep coming back because it keeps getting better. I keep coming back because it keeps getting better." I said, "Wow." And that's the truth, because I knew that I keep coming back because it keeps better, getting better. And then he said, "Unless you find in Alcoholics Anonymous what you were looking for out there, you're not going to stay. Unless you find in Alcoholics Anonymous what you were looking for out there, you're not going to stay." And I thank God every day of my life that I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous what I was looking for out there. This program, fellowship. I don't know what I would do without the fellowship of this program. I don't know what I would do. See, I used to walk into a bar. Oh, God, I'm not going down there. I hate that bastard. You know? I ain't going over. I owe him $5. I ain't going over there. You know? I don't do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I met so many people out there front, and they're all glad to see me. That's never happened to me anywhere, any place, any time. And it only happens because I found an Alcoholics Anonymous. What I was looking for out there. Thank you.